welcome to another edition of the Gobeski Wallace Report. My name's Charlie Wallace.
And I'm Adam Gobeski, and we've got three guests this fine episode. We've got Doug Gobeski.
That's me. Thank you for having me.
Paul Wilcox.
It's good to be back.
And Kevin Vredevoog.
Hey, excited to be here.
And we're here to discuss the latest Coke flavor, that is orange cream Coca-Cola, zero sugar, orange vanilla flavored, and other natural flavors. It's in a orange gradient label, sort of, between orange and a darker red.
So just to be clear, it's in a bottle?
Yeah, this is a 20 ounce.
Because I had Wendy's for dinner, and the freestyle machine was like, Coke, orange cream, a Wendy's exclusive.
What? I've had orange cream for forever at places that aren't Wendy's. So I think they, unless there's something specific about their formulation, they are just, let's say they're out of date rather than that they're lying to you. But anyway, smells fine. Let's give it a taste. Yeah, that orange cream mixed with zero sugar. It's probably better without the zero sugar, just the full HFCS experience. I think the orange cream makes the chemicalness of the zero sugar stand out a little more. But otherwise than that, I mean, it's fine. I don't hate it. So yeah, go out and get yourself a bottle or a 12-pack, or I guess go to Wendy's and steal a freestyle machine. That's Charlie Wallace endorsed.
Yeah. Any way you can get your hands on one.
I did drink a 12-pack of this like a couple weeks ago, or maybe just last week. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it.
I think in order to celebrate the newest Coke flavor, we should talk about the 17th movie in our sci-fi shuffle. Thank you. Today is the 2023 animated film Nimona, which Charlie picked. Charlie, why'd you choose this movie for us to watch? Is that dramatic enough? I'm trying to be dramatic.
It is dramatic enough for me. Yeah.
Doing right, a good job.
I got to live up to that. Oh, geez. Well, I picked this because, I feel like last movie was kind of...
I just watched it and I was desperate for a choice.
Well, I watched it fairly recently. I watched it when it came out in 2023. It was... just had watched V for Vendetta and I was like, let's do something that's not quite as much of a downer. I mean, it's got some, I guess, similar themes, but...
I was depressed at the end of it.
Really? Like the end?
I certainly cried more than V for Vendetta, that's for sure.
Yeah. I agree. the last 5 seconds, obviously, putting
the last 1 second.
On things. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I don't even know if to believe it or not.
Exactly. It could be a prank.
What?
It could be a hologram that Nimona set up.
It feels like we're jumping ahead a little.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess so.
Stick to the formula.
But I don't know. I thought this was a really good animated movie that does deserve to be seen. I mean, it got an Academy Award nomination for Best Animated Film, and so it got some traction there, but I don't think anybody's really thought too much about it since. So now I'm making you all watch it.
So had anyone else seen it before? I personally had not. If you had just said to me at the time Charlie announced Nimona, I would have been like, I don't know what that is. And then after watching it and reading a little bit about the background, I'm like, oh yeah, I very vaguely remember this movie in the news at the time, like the pop culture comic book news, because this is based on a graphic novel. Other than that, I was barely aware this existed, to be honest.
I had also never seen it. In retrospect, I realized that my wife had suggested we watch this maybe a year and a half ago, but at the time I had shot it down because there was a character named Golden Loin, and I did not I did no further reading. I just looked at like the character names. It's like, nah, I don't want to watch this right now. Which I mean, just to spoil a little bit of my feeling. No, I was gonna say I feel like an idiot. I had to, I don't know what the term is, eat crow or whatever, own up to the fact that I adored this movie. So I am very happy that we ended up watching it eventually.
Did you watch it with your wife or by
No, yourself? Honestly, it wasn't until I was like watching the movie that it clicked like, oh yeah, I have heard of this. So no, I'm probably going to watch it with her.
So are you going to suggest it back pretending that that first thing?
I absolutely I owned up to it like immediately. Oh, and it was like, oh man, this was actually, I enjoyed this a lot. So now we'll probably check it out at some point.
Charlie, what movie was that that Kara suggested to you and you were like, I don't know. And then later you were like, we have to see this movie. Someone told me it was great.
That was Moon. We still talk about that one.
Check out this movie I discovered. I think you'll really like it. Aren't I such a good curator?
It was early enough in our relationship that it may have played off a sort of a doofus cute. It wouldn't work so well now.
I also similar boat, other than I still don't. I don't actually remember.
I still haven't seen it.
Here we I'm just here to pretend and see if you can figure it out.
So I think I was vaguely aware that this movie existed, but had kind of forgotten about it and hadn't seen it until yesterday.
So, Charlie, why don't you tell us a little bit about the background of Nimona? Since it's your choice, I assume you did the research.
So it started out in 2012 as a webcomic and then was later made into a graphic novel by N.D. Stevenson. And a few years later, a company called Blue Sky Studios said, okay, yeah, let's make this into a movie. And they were owned by...
Blue Sky, of course, best known for...
Oh, they were best known for...
Ice Age movies.
Ice, I think.
Oh, best known for the Ice Age movies. I guess I wasn't even aware of that. But they were owned by 21st Century Fox, which of course we know was bought out eventually by Disney, at which point the production of this faltered. I mean, it kept getting delayed and delayed. In particular, there with all the Don't Say Gay laws in Florida, there was some pressure from Disney to remove certain aspects of the movie, like, I don't know, the entire thing, I guess.
That was the core plot.
Certainly the kiss. But I think ultimately that isn't the reason the next thing happened, which is that Disney just dissolved Blue Sky Studios entirely, and then the movie was scrapped. But there were a lot of dedicated people behind it. Eventually, they sold to Annapurna, which then distributed through Netflix, so it actually got to see the...
Annapurna, who I know is like a video game.
Right, they do movies and video games. Yeah, it's like a combination.
I thought they dissolved the video game division. Like, everyone resigned last year, didn't they?
Oh, that may be true.
Was that that company? It's so hard to keep track.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
I think. I don't know. Yeah, maybe they resolved, but they did. I'm pretty sure they just, like, everyone quit.
In any case, this was the sort of thing. This was a movie that went through a lot of production hell and then eventually somehow came out the other side. And as I said, it got a Best Animated Film nomination and lost to, well, The Boy and the Heron. So it was a tough year. There was also, I think, Across the Spider-Verse, same year too. So I'm not sure it would have even been second place necessarily, but still a great movie and it got a bit more exposure because of that. So here we are. But then, yeah, I had forgotten too that it was only on Netflix. So thank you everyone for watching it. Not everyone has Netflix. And apparently, according to Doug, you can't just rent it either.
Oh, yeah. I checked.
You have to. They want you to subscribe to watch Netflix.
Yeah.
And then forget about the subscription for 50 years.
That's right. And then they don't prominently display this movie at all. So you have to know it's there and search for it.
Because how long, when did this come out?
2023.
Yeah.
I feel like I should have seen it already, you know, but didn't.
I think that's kind of partly why I was depressed a little bit when the movie was over. Not the movie's fault, but it's like, and you know, props to Netflix for being willing to fund it so that they could finish the movie, but I just wish it had more exposure instead of just immediately disappearing into the algorithm.
I mean, if it was Warner Brothers, they would have finished it and then used it as a tax write-off, and then we never would have seen it.
All right, you're right. It could be worse. Thank you for the proper context of our current life.
One thing I was hesitant to suggest this movie was that I was thinking about it, and I'm like, is this sci-fi? And clearly, I think it is, but... The one thing that really strikes me... Okay, I answered that question.
I mean...
No need to follow up anyone. No.
Yeah.
My the, point
the
is...
The only way to know now is to ask...
I asked myself,
you guys,
is this science fiction? And myself said yes. No further questions.
Myself tends to be right, so I trusted myself.
Especially about things that I ask myself.
I wonder if it fits in the shuffle by technicality, because it's sci-fi for sure, but they've like, does it have
flying motorbikes, bro?
But most of the movies we've watched so far, like the sci-fi has something
any
like
movie with a cell phone is sci-fi.
The sci-fi has something integral to do with the plot, whereas here it, I mean, couldn't have just been a medieval like.
It's kind of an alien story when you think about it. Like, it's got the sci-fi themes of otherness
and all the surveillance technology.
I think passage of time, I mean, you need there to have been an extraordinary amount of time to have passed. I know that's probably more technicality as well, but, you know, getting it to a future relative to the flashback we see later in the movie, I think is important as these things pass into legend.
Yeah. Now, if we were talking about Attack on Titan, another animated property involving tall
walls.
That
is interesting, yeah.
But, you know, maybe a harder sell, but...
Because I was thinking back on the movie and it's like, how much of it was sci-fi? And then rewatching it, I'm like, oh yeah, quite a bit. There's a lot of technology in this.
Lasers figure rather
lasers, computers, yeah, flying cars.
Yeah. Information media.
Yeah, jumbotrons.
Yeah.
Fake news.
Yeah. Flying cars, and nobody just takes one just a little bit higher to look over the wall.
I literally wrote that. Like, one of my notes says, they've never been over the wall when they can literally fly.
I guess they're just zapped on sight. Just, you know, like, oh, I flew too close to the wall. Yeah. My cousin flew too close to the wall. And then they were promptly erased from my memory. So I don't know.
I've been recently replaying the first Mass Effect, which part of the gameplay of that, you can land on planets in a little car, for lack of a better word. And if you drive off the map, you get warned by the pilot of the ship that dropped you off that you're leaving the area. And if you keep going, then he just picks you up and then just puts you back. So maybe the same thing happens in this city.
Oh, okay. The non-violent option. That's nice.
Yeah.
The reverse of like when you drown people in Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Yes, that's what we were all thinking.
I was thinking of like picking up puppies that are trying to wander away.
You're drowning puppies?
What? No, you pick up a puppy and then you put it back with the rest of them, you know, when it's trying to wander away.
What does this have to do with Roller Coaster Tycoon? Is my question.
Nothing. I just thought puppies were more fun.
I told you're going to have to steer, Charlie.
Let me jump in to give my two cents on this.
On puppies
topic.
Versus roller
yes,
coasters?
Exactly correct. I imagine it was through pure fear that no one wanted to go out there. It's been embedded in their society for a millennia that if you go out there, you will get eaten and die. So... I imagine in the past there have probably been people who tried, and characters like whoever the antagonist is, the director, is that right? Like they would shut that down, silence them, whatever. But I imagine it's through pure fear. I mean, it's just, you know, we're told presumably correctly that there's no air in space. So we're not going to try to go into space to like confirm that. They're all told you go out the wall, you will get eaten to death by monsters. Why would you want to go out and get eaten to death by monsters? Why would they lie?
But we've all been, well, I don't know.
Well, we've all been to space.
You can go high enough to feel like I'm short of breath. All it takes was a good, what, 7,000 feet?
Yeah, but maybe that's just a band.
Yep. There's a gravity wall around the Earth that keeps air out for a period, and then it just boop, pops right back up.
Right.
So I would buy that as an in-universe thing. the fear. Well, I mean, that too, but like the fear hypothesis. But one thing I was wondering is, maybe it's because I had to watch this in a couple sessions. Did it feel like that fear of outside the wall was properly communicated? Like, was that... I kind of felt like I was like, why is everyone so scared of like these monsters or whatever? Like, did I miss like a part where that was like really driven home in the exposition?
So Nimona at one point says something to Ballister about going out past the wall, and he's basically acts like that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard ever.
Oh, okay.
It's scary out there. And then so that gets reinforced a bit with the stuff the director is saying at one point. So
okay.
About like cracks in the wall.
All right. I need movies to tell, not show me. So that's on me. I needed info dumped at the beginning that everyone is, that a central part of the society is everyone being scared of outside the wall.
To be fair,
I really thought it was going to be a movie about power struggles with knights or whatever.
I was ready for this to have the full Netflix dialogue of people are folding their laundry watching this. We have to repeat everything that's happened over and over again, but it didn't happen that much.
They actually made a real movie and they sold it to the not real movie company.
Right. The one knock I will put on this movie is during the emotional climax of the movie where Nimona is basically just making the decision to off herself. I think it would have worked a little better without replaying the dialogue from earlier over that. I think it went without saying what was going on there. So I did actually make a note that that was an example where they really did not need to retell. I think the visuals would have more than dealt with it. Now, whether that's for the folding laundry club, I don't know. But
maybe that's just for the kids.
Just for the kiddos. The hero's about to kill themselves.
They got a lot of laundry to fold.
So they live in a walled city. How do they know what whales are?
Books?
I was going to guess books or probably, TV shows or
either fantasy characters.
Could have an aquarium.
Aquarium with a whale? Yeah, they have whales. Yeah, they do.
Oh, I'm sorry. They have lasers and flying cars, but a whale in an aquarium is too sci-fi.
There's no way they
You'd have to go outside the wall to get the whale.
And maybe 800 years ago, someone did.
So they're just familiar with inbred Free Willy descendants?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I can understand why they'd be scared of whales. Sure.
Besides, Kevin, you know what a unicorn is, and we don't have any of those.
True. Yeah, you know, were
you sure about that? You sure
about that? Transformed into a fat unicorn.
Were there other animals in the movie? I did not pay attention at all. Just like, are they viewing pretty much all non-human animals as monstrous? Like, could a whale have been something from folklore as far as they were concerned?
Could be. Like, I don't remember seeing... I didn't see any wet markets or anything.
That's... I'm trying to... Jesus.
Yeah, what do they even eat? Nachos.
I mean...
I guess.
Pizza, yeah.
Human nachos.
The what was the cereal? The crazy Dragon Krispies or kibble, whatever? Oh, yeah.
I mean, obviously, this is all fun to speculate in, but I do think that nobody just even thought about that. Like when creating the movie, like the story?
Nah, there was definitely one guy. And they were like, shut up, Ted.
They were like, you're going to ruin this movie, you pet ant.
We have to establish how they know about whales in the introduction. But yeah, what did everybody think about the melding of the medieval design and futuristic stuff?
It was a cool take, you know, like made sense. And it kind of, you know, they made the aesthetic match and everything.
Yeah, it was pretty much seamless somehow.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think my favorite, I don't know, mashup would be Ballister's, you know, armor with his like weird steampunk robot hand. Like I really enjoyed the aesthetic.
When they just whip together while on the run.
Absolutely. As one does.
Yeah, between the arm and like all of the legacy stuff, like only the elite people from these families can be knights. I was thinking a lot of Rise of Skywalker this time around.
Wow, that bad, huh?
But like a dig at Rise of Skywalker. Like,
at least this has the decency to be like a metaphor.
No, I know.
Rise of Skywalker, if it's a metaphor, it's not a metaphor. It's just dead speak.
They say it right at the beginning.
Money, please.
I like the message that if your hatred is pure enough, you too can be a knight. You can be recognized by the regent.
But not by the leader of the racists.
The director.
Yeah.
Did she have a name?
The director, I think, is what the credits said.
Okay.
It was kind of hard to tell because Netflix was immediately like, watch something else! I had to manually click up to the credits to go back to them.
we know you like this, but have you thought about is it cake? While you're drying you watch your this eyes,
and go ahead and red notice.
Erase the feelings.
Oh, speaking of casting, you know, when you first start a Netflix movie, it shows you like just a couple names from the cast. And I misread Eugene Lee Yang as Eugene Levy. And I feel like the movie would have had a slightly different vibe if Golden Loin was a, you know, whatever he is now, 65-year-old Eugene Canadian. Levy. Yeah.
But yeah, one thing. So Brianne was briefly in the room while I was watching before she had to go. And she looked over and like at the beginning of the movie and she commented, oh wow, this has real Disney vibes. And then like the two guys like held hands or whatever in that one scene, like in the Raptors or whatever, and she was like, oh, maybe not. But it did give me like this sort of feel of like what a more progressive Disney might look like, and that there is definitely that sort of Disney vibe of occasionally just like dumb jokes to keep the kids happy kind of thing.
It does kind of present us an alternate future in reality and unreality.
Yeah, I agree. Like the jokes especially just kept coming like just the right time when you kind of forgot that it was a comedy for a minute. And then like there'd just be a joke in the background or something. It felt almost like Lord and Miller, sort of like adjacent to that, like the way the jokes were coming up. So I don't know. I really liked it.
Lord and Miller. They got hired for Solo, right?
Yes. The claim to fame.
The only thing anyone knows about
we had a couple of voice actors from our Merry Marvel Movie March. We have Riz Ahmed who played Ballister. I thought he did a good job. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Chloe Grace Moretz.
Yay.
They also did a good job.
One thing, sorry, I didn't know this until I looked this up right now. The voice actor for Ballister looks comically close to the character of Ballister.
Right. Like
they clearly designed directly off of his face.
And I think Eugene Lee Yang, I think his face is the model for Golden Loin, I believe.
I buy that. Yeah, the same face shape. It's pretty distinct.
Which is funny, though, because if you look up the production history of it, it's like, oh, they were going to have, Riz Ahmed do the voice and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh, they must have known earlier than that. Character design looks pretty distinct.
Heard they did some posts to just the faces, just change the faces.
It's not a Marvel movie.
Honestly, between this and Venom, I am really impressed with Riz Ahmed's range. Like,
yeah, he's good.
Like the guy, he was perfect in both roles, I think.
He's a talented actor.
Yeah.
I've not seen The Sound of Metal, but I know he's in it.
And only other voice actor I wanted to mention was, who's the jerk? I forget his name within the movie. Todd, yeah. It's Beck Bennett, of course. Whose voice I recognized immediately. Oh, he's from Saturday Night Live. Or was for
Saturday
several years.
Night Live.
It was hard to detach him from like the characters that he plays in sketches.
I think he had a slightly
serious line. I'm like, oh, I guess he's a jerk. Like I used to think he was funny, but now I hate him forever.
I think he was on an episode of I Think You Should Leave. He's the guy who has to pay to be in his friends group. At least that's what his face looks like.
Yeah,
yes. Has a real smooth rhythm.
We should have started with that.
He was a wild man in the pool. Now he has to pay the most possible. I want to just, again, I'm just learning this as I'm reading through the cast list. I want to plug Julio Torres, who played the Squire Diego. He has a wonderful TV show on, I believe, Max called Phantasmas. Highly recommend.
Oh, I haven't seen it. I've heard good things.
Anyone looking to look? Yeah. Nope. Excellent. Highly, highly recommend.
What's it about?
It's sort of sketch comedy, sort of a surrealistic look at his life. It's definitely, I'm sure, part of the reason he was involved in this. It has a lot of queer themes. It's weird, but again, very good.
But yeah, since you bring it up, we've kind of talked about it, but we should, let's tackle it directly. Let's talk about the LGBTQ themes in this movie. Because I think it's safe to say that if Disney had gone through with releasing this movie would look very different.
I'm not sure what this movie would have been about.
I don't know how you can. Honestly.
I mean, you'd have to make it very generic.
The writer, Andy Stevenson, I mean, he is non-binary, transmasculine. I mean, it is, I don't know that you can even call this, you know, trans-coded or LGBTQ-coded. I mean, that is literally the point. You could take out the, you know, the gay relationship, I guess, but you just kind of have to bury your head in the sand to pretend that that's not what the other entire plot of the movie is about. And I will say, in as far as Disney ever entertains the idea of LGBTQ characters, like, it feels
well, they
very,
do all the time. They,
it very tokenized, yeah. 2 seconds, like a kiss that can be edited out for certain markets. Like, this movie, it felt very natural. It didn't feel like, you know, shoved in for the sake of being able to say, which obviously I'm sure comes from the source material and the overall theme of the movie. But, you know, it was maybe I don't want to call it realistic, but it was an extraordinarily refreshing LGBTQ relationship, and maybe one of the most interesting, best, I don't know, that I've seen in an animated movie, at least.
So tell me if you think differently, too. Like, in this society that they're in, it was really interesting to see that. Do you think that there was any animosity towards Ballister and Golden Loin for being gay?
No, because Todd, who is the most likely, I think, to be a bigot, I guess, if you were going to pick any character in the movie that wasn't like the director, that wasn't already bigoted in some way,
right?
To be like a bigot about that, it would probably be Todd. And he harasses Golden Loin not because they were together, but because he was a queen killer and Golden Loin didn't even know something like that.
Right, right. Yeah, so I thought it was really pretty interesting that, I mean, not only to get the representation in there, but it's also like, all right, they're not just lumping, like, oh, gay and trans together, right? They're like, oh, yeah, you know, it's the same thing, right? They're both being discriminated against.
Yeah, and I mean, who the heck knows? I haven't done any research on this. It could be as simple as, you know, the author didn't want to create a world where, you know, a non-binary, gay, any of those individuals are explicitly, you know, frowned upon.
Well,
I mean, it's
yeah,
more the yeah, I don't, who knows?
Well, I mean, everybody had an outlet for their bigotry of hating the monsters.
That's right, the monsters and the lowborn.
Didn't seem like there was ever anything more than just one monster. And
well, I think it's just the fear of possible monsters.
Yeah, right? I mean, they didn't know, as noted. No one had even popped
looked over the wall.
The wall. Yeah.
No one had
thousand
turned around
years,
and looked over.
1,000 years, and they never managed to catch a single monster, but they're completely confident they're right outside.
Well, I think that's part of the metaphor, though, right?
I mean, it's explicitly mm-hmm. called out near the end where Golden Loin, you know, says to the director, like, yeah, you know, it's 1,000 years, but like, what if we've been wrong the whole time? I struggle to call this a kid's movie. I mean, maybe a young adult
mm-hmm.
movie, but Charlie, when you said it was maybe worth giving it a shot with my kids, I do not think that this would have played well. And they are,
it had been
I
a mean, while since I'd seen it.
Yeah, there's a, again, around the time one of the protagonists tried killing themselves, I think that would have been difficult to explain to my 3-year-old.
Plus,
some people don't want to live anymore. So because I stayed through the whole credits, I am the only person on the planet who saw that at the end of the credits, there is actually a message of saying something defective. If you need to talk to someone, you can go to this website, which is a nice touch that no one sees because of the Netflix algorithm. But
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, when it squeezes
hey,
it
I saw
the corner
it
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did see it as a pirate. The credits stay full screen.
It was interesting because it was at the climax of the movie and there was still like 20 minutes left or something. And I paused it and Cara was watching it with me. And I'm like, I know there's not that much time left in the movie. And it was a very long credit sequence, but they listed every single person from Blue Sky Studios in the credits too. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, it's fantastic. And like that at the end. And then, yeah, it's a good credit sequence, but very long.
Yeah. One of the, I don't know if complaint's the right word, but one thing I kept noticing about this movie is that it keeps reaching a natural climax, and then something else happens to shift it, so now they have to keep going. Like, that happened like 4 times.
Yeah.
They're like, they won. Nope. They won. Nope. They won. Nope.
Which could be the webcomic or graphic novel of it, depending on how that was written. I actually wish that I had a chance to go and read that. I would like to read that now. That? No, I haven't.
So you're just speculating.
I am speculating, yes.
A graphic novel could be perfect, and you are unfairly libeled, slandered.
That's not even a criticism. I'm just saying that if that's the way that it's written, then that might be the way it's adapted, too.
I ordered it shortly after watching the movie, but it will not arrive until tomorrow. I was hoping it would get here this morning, and I could at least thumb through it.
Let's reschedule, everybody.
Cancel.
Yeah. Back in 24 hours.
I guess we haven't talked about Nimona yet. Somehow. What did people think about our introduction to Nimona?
She's sassy.
She is.
Makes a real strong first impression.
She sprayed that guy in the face.
She's a menace, but in a good way.
You know, it was interesting because I feel like we didn't get her backstory is kind of implied until we're actually completely like shown it. Now it's like totally tied to, you know, the whole plot. But I thought it was interesting because it's like, well, I guess I wanted to see, like, what was an influence in her life that made her so sassy, you know, because we saw how, I don't know, I guess it's like, was there any kind of like, aside from her friend, was that like the only kind of positive influence in her childhood?
I think it's probably whatever this world's equivalent of the Sex Pistols is, you know, the Sex Sabers or something.
Okay, so maybe also sex generally crossbows. Like punk, like kind of culture or like sort of things being distilled down. Because I was like, how'd she get so cool if she only had bad happen to her? Like, you have to have some good stuff too to like become kind of like rebellious or have your own real like voice, you know, like she did.
I think it was interesting though how like they built this whole city around this legend of this valiant warrior slaying this evil monster, and then you find out it was just a little girl pointing a wooden sword at another little girl.
Oh yeah,
around a fire that had been accidentally started. So I thought that was a nicely subtle touch.
The legend was created for insurance reasons,
right? Paul just perked up.
I mean, when I saw how flammable their village was, I was like, there's ways to prevent this.
We're not
that's
right
why
this.
Insurance companies are here to make you mad by coming out to your property and telling you not to do that. See all this very dry straw over here by the dragon girl? You don't want to do that. See how it leads over to the houses?
I guess the Netflix icons probably tipped you off, but did people know right away that she could change her form? Like, was that a surprise when that came up, or was like, oh, we know that's going to happen?
I knew because when you told us what movie it was, I looked it up to go, what the hell is this? And,
yeah.
And the first line is something like, a shapeshifter and a knight team up to solve crime.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think the description may have tipped me off as well.
Probably.
Yeah, no, the pirate sites don't do that. You can get the peer experience. You just hit that magnet link button and just get the movie.
You've heard, right?
that's what they tell me.
Yeah. That's what the following people at work tell me. Kathy. Jordan.
I mean, my experience was the same as Adam's in that, yeah, I saw, oh, here's the 2-sentence blurb describing the movie. He's like, oh, yep, shapeshifter. That must be this character who's not the knight character. Got it.
There aren't enough Netflix descriptions that say, it's 2 people in a movie, just watch it.
Trust us. Look at this still image. Does it mean anything to you? Good. Now watch the movie.
What if we put this actor that you like who's in it for half a second as the main photo?
Eugene Levy.
Oh, Jeff Goldblum's in it? Spoilers.
On the topic of the shape-shifting, I really did like that as a metaphor for, I don't know, gender fluidity or whatever, you know, you want to call it. And specifically The interaction Nimona has with Ballister, you know, describing like, yeah, could I just look like a girl? Sure. But I don't remember exactly what she says. Like, it makes her feel internally itchy, or like she's about to, like that feeling right before you sneeze. Like, I just, I really enjoyed that part of the overall metaphor. And actually, Adam, sorry, I forgot to mention when you were discussing this earlier, even the entire backstory of her, you know, having this friend until the friend is told by the grown-ups that it is bad and evil to be the way that she is, and that friendship falling apart. I mean, it's just, it was all subtle enough that, again, going back yet another step, Disney probably could have just delivered this as a straightforward good guy, bad guy. It's a little bit more complicated than that story, but it just, the queer messaging is just wonderfully done, I thought, and not depressing, but very, very well done.
Yeah, I think it also, with the context of the movie and her being like a shapeshifter and like changing into a dragon and things like that, just the conversations with Ballister, I think, hit pretty hard too, because he's asking questions that in this particular situation, right, we might ask ourselves, and then we kind of get that shame brought back at us being like, oh yeah, no, I didn't actually think about it this way. Like, obviously you wouldn't talk to a trans person that way. It'd be like super offensive. And they're like, oh, okay. I don't know. I just really like the couple of times they had conversations like that.
And, you know, I think like with the first question he asked her, which I think was just a more direct, why not just hide this? She doesn't answer right away. But, you know, even that probably just comes from the pain of, I mean, hell, I don't know her backstory fully, but, you know, every other person who has asked her that she opened up to over her life before realizing, you know, he is just trying to understand better. It's not an attack. It was just a nice moment of her opening herself up a little as well.
Yeah, but also says something about the society that even someone who's not necessarily intentionally bigoted.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. You know,
that's still like his first immediate response, because he's been told all his life that these are monsters.
Right. No, you're right.
It was also very satisfying when they, like, after the scene where they get the confession, where they're finally on the same page and having a lot of fun scene, where Ballister's like, all right, yeah, let's actually do this.
Oh, and they're dancing.
Yeah, and they're dancing and uploading stuff. And
it was a very Disney feel. Well, not even Disney. That was almost more like a Despicable Me. Like,
right. It was silly.
That moment. Yeah. Very silly. Took me out ever so slightly.
A little bit Boss Baby in.
Yeah. Not enough nudity to be Boss Baby.
Mild Boss Baby.
I really liked, I'd forgotten about it this time too, but just the murder wall / innocence wall bit was pretty good, and plastering all that stuff in. But then just at the end where, like, then you compare that to like the remembrance wall that they have for her, it's like, oh man, it definitely got me.
Yeah, she's also a murderer. That's the subtext, right?
Yeah,
because they're both murder walls.
That's it.
Tell me if I misunderstood something, guys.
You know, I was kind of impressed that they came up with a villain that was completely unsympathetic. Like, I did not like the villain one bit, like, through the whole thing. Like, normally I'm just
the director, you mean?
Yeah, normally I'm like, well, you know, sometimes, you know, the villain is, you know, at least like fun or something. But nope, just humorless and paranoid and homicidal. Just a real piece of work.
Conniving.
Yep, that too.
So you're not the person who created this, the director did nothing wrong subreddit?
See, I can't tell if you're making a joke.
I assumed he was
describing
being
a real thing. It sounds like a joke.
That would require someone who would say that to engage with this movie in a serious way. I don't think give up that credit.
Yeah, that would involve someone to have discovered this movie on Netflix.
I was wondering, there's a scene where Nimona is turning into the serial dragon, where they're playing that music in the background, which is the same music as the commercial. And I was like, oh yeah, I really remember this music distinctly. And I was like, wait a second, that is the same music that they play in Kick-Ass when Chloe Grace Moretz is like, when you first meet her and she's like killing all those guys.
Wait, you remember something from Kick-Ass?
Right. It was just that song. It's like the same song. And I was wondering, like, I wasn't able to find anything. I was like, is that like a reference? Did they pick that on purpose?
That was familiar.
Yeah. Well, it's also like a theme song for a 70s children's show. And I don't even think it's the same version of the song. I looked it up and they're slightly different versions. They're both like weird punk versions of
Nimona when the cereal dragon shows up.
Oh, by the way, when they had the ad
banana splits.
Yeah, that's it.
One banana, two banana. All right.
The sequel to Jungle to Jungle.
Yeah. So.
Wait, that's not Jungle 3 Jungle?
No. We're going like the other way. Like it's banana to banana, you know? Like bananas could be in the jungle. Like, so a sequel can be like in a sequel.
Whoa. Sequelception.
So when they had the ad for the cereal, I had a definite flashback to Mandy with the ad for the mac and cheese.
No, I forget that.
I just kept waiting for the cereal ad to say, from Devane.
That is not one of the things I remember from Mandy, and I remember a lot of images very distinctly.
Cheddar Goblin.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes.
The Cheddar Goblin. How could you forget the Cheddar Goblin?
You described it poorly, I guess.
Apparently. Well, I think it's just because they were both vomiting up food products, you know?
Oh, yeah. That part made me wonder how that worked. Were those pieces of her body? Like, what was going on there?
Oh. She breathed fire earlier, but that is not quite
as... Yeah, but fire's just a chemical reaction. Those were, literal pink pellets.
Yeah, I was just like being like, wow, the graphics technology, like the effects, you know, like they stayed there. So
she seems to be able to create mass. Yeah, I mean, she's able to turn from a girl size and weight to a whale size and weight. So
that's true.
Yeah, she must pull the mass.
Sort of pocket dimension.
So yeah.
Very Attack on Titan elsewhere. Feel in that sense, too.
Are there pocket dimensions in Attack on Titan? I don't think I got that far.
No, it's like, well, how are they so big? Like, where does the mass come from? And they're like super light or something like that. They're steam. Getting their energy from the sun. Steam. Yeah.
Do you see how hot they are? That's got to have something to do with it. Yeah, I was waiting for, you know, something to like pop out of the wall when there was just like a hole in it, you know, at the end.
They were maybe right the whole time.
She was just waiting to get her friends inside.
The wall is made of monsters.
I don't know why I started thinking about the Metalloid Maniac there.
That's the wall that they built.
That's right.
It's actually his ground.
Just need to skitter up there like a bug. Monster.
You know, in terms of
the planet,
in terms of being bad at their one job, I keep harping on this, but they had to go to the archives, to the ancient scroll, in order to even see that, oh, this is what the monster looks like. And it's like, what were you training for? Was there no monster identification 101?
The scroll was like
documents, but you were going off like verbal accounts the whole time.
Yeah, right.
Well, the scroll had like the girl inside the monster, so you could see like that there was a girl inside or something, which was also what they saw. And the
Doug's point is that shouldn't they just know that? Shouldn't that be part of the?
I guess so. Yeah.
They had a lot of time to figure out what was going on in that picture.
Maybe they didn't want to go so far as to cause everybody to start chasing after little girls and trying to kill them, I guess.
Shove all little girls to the other side of the wall.
Yeah. I'm out of here. I guess we don't know what the first 100 years were like. They almost wiped themselves out.
It seems like the entire populace did immediately become extremely paranoid upon that being revealed to them.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair, they turn course quickly, too. They seem very malleable.
They're very easily led.
Real sheep. Real sheeple.
Wake up, sheeple. So, I don't know how many, if we're to the random funny moments that we want to bring up in yeah, the movie absolutely are. Part or not. But I thought I had to pull up the tape a little bit. When he first brings up the squire and she's like, oh, you want the squire? Let's get him. I thought that was so funny. Like, that line delivery was perfect. That was me watching it again. Sorry. You need the squire? Then let's get him. Let's go get him.
I don't think we've explicitly talked about the animation style very much, but I was a fan of it in general. And the visual of the scene where Nimona is about to impale herself on the statue's sword, but Ballister just kind of holds her back with his little robot hand. They dwelled on that shot a good long time, and I loved it. I rewatched it, just that scene, before jumping back in here. I really have nothing else to say about it, except I love the way it's composed with her, this gigantic dark figure, and him, this minuscule little guy, just pushing back, trying to keep her from. I don't really have anything deeper to say about it other than I just adored the way that scene was, you know, played out as a whole, I guess.
I wonder how he got up there so fast, though.
If I had to complain about one thing in this movie, there was a lot of convenient teleportation of characters from place to place. Like, it just felt like, oh, we're in this scene and they're over here. Now we're in this scene. They made it to the director's palace or whatever. Like, people just were where they needed to be for things to happen.
If I've learned anything about movies, it's that there need to be a lot more scenes of people like going from one place to another person.
It needs
to,
like, bad 1950s movies where it shows people driving down a street like in full detail, parking their car.
MST3K movie.
Exactly.
Parking, driving, getting out of the car, walking into the building.
I did think that was pretty effective when Nimona pretended to be Golden Loin, like, in order to get that video, where you'd think it's just a cut to a scene that's happening, like, on the other side of the city, mm-hmm. right, when there's actually time that's passed. So I thought it worked really well there, but I do agree otherwise.
I did write down, what is up with this death scene? Then I was like,
I did not piece it together as quickly as most children, I imagine, would have pieced together watching it.
I wasn't terribly fooled.
So you're saying you're a child.
Yeah, how quickly did you guys pick up on who the villain was, who the murderer was?
Nimona? Right away.
Well, no. Who
killed
who
all those guards?
They were like that.
Did she, though?
She got there.
In my head canon.
She killed the director, but that was about it.
She threw an axe at someone from across the courtyard. Presumably they died. Though we did not dwell on it after she threw the axe.
There were a couple guards who fell really far.
The tower block exploded.
Oh, yeah.
I did not pick up it was the director until the Squire's video.
Ditto. I mean, they could have been anyone as far as I was concerned up until then.
Yeah.
I might have figured it out if I thought about what I think will happen in movies while I'm watching them. I wish I could do that.
See, I did. I was like, well, it's got to be somebody they've shown us. And who's most likely to be evil here?
Yeah. Who actually has any, like, motive, or who's drank the Kool-Aid the most lost in the sauce?
I at least briefly thought that the queen was going to play that role, like she faked her own death to, like, keep that from happening. If you'd asked me before the reveal to make a guess, that would have been mine. But
I was a little surprised that the queen was dead.
Mm-hmm.
That was me too. I needed to see her die.
Yeah,
sure.
This is a, you know, not to bring up the best Star Wars movie again, but we don't actually see Chewie die. Jesus Christ.
The high point of cinema right there. So, yeah, Charlie, now that you have the chance to rewatch it and have us all watch it, do you think it holds up? Would you recommend it to more people?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it hasn't been that long since the movie came out, so it definitely holds up. I thought it was really funny. I watched it with Kara. She liked it a lot, too. And yeah, I'd recommend anybody who likes animation, I think, should see this. I think you put it pretty well, Adam, not to steal what you said, but like it's kind of like in some sort of alternate universe, like what Disney could make if, you know, they actually had the guts to do something like that. But just good representation. And like, I don't know. I love the story. I like the conversations that Ballister and Nimona had. And it was fun. And they gave a lot of, like, even just background characters are getting, like, funny lines. I think my favorite joke of the entire thing was Golden Loins. It wasn't background, but it was him looking at the video and realizing that it wasn't Ballister because he doesn't like freestyle jazz. Just like, even like the semi-serious characters get some jokes in. Now, I thought it was great.
Rarely do we ever get that kind of detail about any character. Like, right. I want to know what their stance is.
Or the nachos that they both go there to order nachos. He knows exactly where it is.
Yeah, it's a shame they had to cut the scene with the fully loaded nachos.
I mean, they have a rule there, you know?
I will admit, when I started the movie, I was kind of skeptical. Partly because it was just nights for forever.
Yeah, he texts me, I don't understand how this is supposed to be sci-fi. And I'm like, well, maybe you should watch for 3 minutes.
That is not what I texted.
Sorry, you said, am I watching the right movie? And then, this is all about nights and I said, for like 3 minutes, LOL.
To be fair, it's for nights and for like 6 minutes.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, like the laser.
That comes pretty early on, yeah.
That makes it sci-fi. It's
the Jumbotron makes it sci-fi.
I hadn't gotten that far.
There were no Jumbotrons with only a mouth on them, though. And I think that's kind of an important part of any talkie dystopia.
And, it definitely won me over by the end. Like I said, I was actually sort of, I don't know if depressed is the right word, unhappy, I guess, when the movie was over. Partly because it felt like this was a really good movie that more people should see. And I'm kind of sad that it's just been buried in the Netflix algorithm. I think it deserves much better than that.
I think at the end of everybody saying something, they should say, what do you think happened in the last couple seconds of the movie? We didn't come back to that.
Oh, he turns around and triggers a hologram. Okay. Of Nimona saying, if you're seeing this, then I'm dead. I just want you to know that I'm mad at you, and I hope you drop dead. Because she recorded at that point when she was mad at him.
Oh, yeah. Don't record post-death messages when you're angry.
That's right.
Or maybe only do that? I don't know.
I only write my will when I'm mad at a grandkid.
But I had a similar experience to Adam, and then I was like, is this sci-fi? Like, this is definitely going to be a movie about, like, you know, royal drama or something along those lines that's set in a sci-fi setting. But it wasn't that. And I, in the end, really enjoyed, you know, the plot, the characters, the voice acting was spectacular and great animation to match. Nimona is an iconic character now. Like, the, you know, performance there was great. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Really just strong artistry to it. The sad kaiju scene at the end, incredibly powerful, very tear-jerking. I would definitely recommend it to anyone.
Okay, and what happened at the very last bit of the movie?
Oh, that was the question. Okay, I went back to the before thing. I don't have a theory. Sorry, I wasn't prepared for that.
But what's your head
canon? Ambiguous, yeah.
My head canon is that maybe Nimona kind of always is, and that the type of creature that she is sort of transcends our ideas of life and death and rebirth and that sort of thing. That's what I would go with if I were making a sequel, that Nimona is more a force of nature than like a single being, something like that.
It was a good movie. I enjoyed it. And as far as the bit at the very end, I assume that it was because it was a callback to the earlier scene. It was Ballister turning around and seeing, oh, hey, it's his friend Nimona, somehow alive. That's my headcanon.
Yeah, I've definitely got a thought to it, too. I don't know if Kevin would mind any spoilers for the graphic novel based on what I read or not. I
mean, kind of no spoilers. No spoilers.
Oh, just that I think it's really interesting that I think, like, with the last 1 second for him to turn around and say that, it's supposed to be like, oh, okay, she is definitely back then. Like, the way he has that expression on his face and, like, is just about to swear.
Holy shit. She's still dead.
Right.
I can't believe.
Because
that everything. My house is on fire.
Because from what I've read about the graphic novel, that doesn't happen. Like, we don't necessarily get that. So It is a departure from what the graphic novel does. Although, yeah, it's ambiguous. Obviously, there's different ways that we're all reading it differently. So
I honestly, like, after the ending scene, I just had this feeling that no matter what they did, I couldn't come back from it. You know, she could be as alive can be, and it still wouldn't make it a happy ending or something, you know.
But you were that tore up about the director dying?
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty overtly positive ending. I mean, in that the entire city, country, I guess I don't have a great sense of the scale of the place, like, they were all love with Nimona now, and presumably people like her.
And yeah. They were seeing what the world was like. Yes. They were seeing what the world was like outside the wall, too.
Also now that they don't have tearing to down their big
death
anymore.
Ray laser cannons.
Feel Martin Luther King.
Okay, now I feel like I have to watch the end of the movie again, because what's going on. Like, sure, the world is fine, but wait, what do you guys think happened?
His house caught on fire.
Oh, okay.
That's why that red glow is suddenly there.
How amazing would it have been if they, like, panned the camera over and that was what he was reacting to? Oh my god. Like, to ruin a movie that thoroughly in the last 1 second.
My roast is ruined!
It was Aurora Borealis! So, I'm non-binary, and as a member of the transgender community, it's been a rough year. I love this movie. I cried for the last 10 minutes. Thank you, Charlie, very much for picking it. It was nice. It made me sad and happy, and it was just really nice. That's all I got.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Well, thanks, Charlie, for letting us know that Nimona existed so that it wasn't swallowed by the algorithm. Apparently, I'm just hung up on this algorithm thing.
Do you even watch much Netflix, Adam?
No. lately, I've been using it to watch Kunk on Earth. That's about it.
So you know about my mate, Paul, then?
I mean, I'm only 2 episodes in.
Okay. So you know about Pump Up the Jam, then?
Yes, I do know about Pump Up the Jam. So yeah, thanks, Charlie. But now it's time to move on. The sci-fi shuffle is ravenous. It is insatiable. So it's time to go to wheelofnames.com.
It's just me and, okay, 50-50.
50-50 oh, between Paul and Kevin.
I'm terrified right now.
Go.
I got my pick locked in. This is going to be quick and easy if it's me. It's not me. It looks like based on momentum. Quick and easy.
Ooh, I'm getting trauma on the red over blue pick right now.
Anyway, Paul is our winner.
Ooh, okay.
So this is what it'll look like next time. Not that anyone can see.
I was hoping we were going to do Wheel of Names next time anyways.
You're still sharing.
I believe he's talking to the viewing audience or listening audience.
Gotcha. I could still see.
All right, Paul, what's next on the Sci-Fi Shuffle?
Well, do you guys want to do some kind of fun little, like, flow chart or something? Because I don't have one planned out, but we could try.
A flowchart where you don't know what the answer is going to be? That's been great.
Well, like, where I picked
that's
two things.
That's how flowcharts work, Charlie.
Vibes, you know? Like, do you want the dumb movie or the dumber movie?
Oh.
I'm pro choose your own adventure, as long as it's something you got semi-ready to go.
Okay. 2000s dumb movie or 90s dumb movie?
Oh.
I'd go 90s. Yeah, have we done many 90s movies?
I was wrong about the decade. 2000.
God damn it.
Mid-2000s or early 2000s?
How many total years separate these two films?
Let's see, two.
I want the dumb movie that seems like it's from the 90s, but it's...
I stand by my original choice.
Okay, dumb movie that seems like it's from the 90s, or like, I don't know, heady, funny movie from the 80s?
Dumb movie that seems like it's from the 90s.
Okay.
That's my vote.
Does either one of them have Val Kilmer?
I don't think so.
Mm.
All right,
have a preference then.
All right, let's
it's
go.
Not the Island of Dr. Moreau. I'm not interested.
All right, let's go with 2003's The Core.
Yes,
I'm good with that.
Oh yes,
a movie I have seen.
I've never seen it. It was made for me, and I've never seen it.
Is Aaron Eckhart in that, or am I thinking of something else about? Okay,
pretty sure.
Yeah.
Charlie and I watched that back on Netflix when Netflix had all the movies.
Yeah.
Not to spoil anything, but my main memory is a character yelling the whales.
Okay. That just thickens the mystery for me.
It is one of the dumbest movies I have ever seen. I love it so much.
All right. Well, thanks, Paul, for pulling up clearly a fondly remembered film, 2003's The Core. Not from the 90s, like it feels like it really should be.
It does. Like 2003 in 2025 might as well be 1997.
All right. Well, we have that to look forward to. So thanks. I don't know why I'm looking at the poster of The Core and it has real Left Behind vibes.
Just as an aside, the movie that I was guessing that he was going to say was Real Genius for the 80s movie.
Got that movie existed.
Oh, Real Genius. What is it? What is
That's why I asked if it was a Val Kilmer movie.
Oh, okay. Oh.
What was
I think it's the same year.
Movie? Short Circuit by chance?
It was Brazil.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think
I don't know much about it at all. That's why I didn't have a good description of it, because I was like, oh, I've been wanting to see that, but I also mostly want to see The Core.
The Core will make a nice change of pace from decent movies. So thanks for that. And thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Sci-Fi Shuffle here at the Gobeski Wallace Report. I'm Adam Gobeski.
And I'm Charlie Wallace. We had three guests with us today. We had Kevin Vredevoog.
Hey, it was a pleasure.
Doug Gobeski.
Thanks for having me.
And Paul Wilcox.
Thanks for, it was a, thanks for great time as always.
Thanks for Sorry. Great time.
Thanks for great time.
Thanks for listening. If you liked that episode, you can go to GobeskiWallaceReport.com, or we've got a lot of social media placeholder accounts. We don't post there so much, though.
Well, we all know about the downfall of Twitter, but everything exciting is on the website. Yeah, there may be a fan wiki out there somewhere. I don't know. I haven't checked recently.
Yeah, that's your job, listeners.
But you can sleep at Charlie's house.
Oh, we're back to this.
Let's pay all its own.
Paul got confused and watched Moana instead.
Hey, that would also be different, but I still haven't seen that. I need to see Moana.
It's good.
Oh, the original, very good, yeah.
I haven't seen the second one, so I can't comment on that.
Me neither. It didn't get reviewed great, though.
Yeah.
It's really the return of Jafar.
That's what I kind of heard, was it was basically one of those direct-to-video movies that somehow got a theatrical release.
What? Really? Oh.
That was basically the vibe I got from like a couple reviews I saw.
Nice.
They were like, it's fine. It's exactly the sort of thing they just would have put on VHS in like 1995.